everyone. This is Yannick Silver from InternetLifestyle.com and MaverickBusinessAdventures.com. And with me, I got one of my friends, Tim Ferriss, who I'm really excited to bring back and interview again. We haven't done a formal interview in, I guess, a couple years now since he released the 4-hour work week, which just went on to obviously become an amazing, successful phenomenon. The guy is, just everywhere nominated as one of Fast Company's most innovative business people, angel investor in some of the really mainstream websites like StumbleUpon, Dig, Twitter. I said he's the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Wall Street Journal, and Business Week bestseller, 4-Hour Work Week. It has now been sold in 35 different languages. He's all over the place. I just opened up Wire Magazine a couple weeks ago. He's in there. Tim is just one of those really amazing, inspirational guys that is doing so many different things from helping out and having a big impact with the thing he does with Lit Liberation and Donor Shoes to just really being involved in a lot of different internet activities, and as well as crazy ass experiments and things that we're going to get to, because it's a little bit OCD. So, Tim, you there?
Just a little.
Yeah. all right. So this is fun because you and I met a couple years ago, like right before, maybe it was like a year and a half before 4-Hour Work Week came out, and we both were big fans of Dan Kennedy, and I reached out to you, and we kind of realized that we share a little bit of that same wild DNA together of really wanting to live life and experience everything. And you've done all sorts of crazy stuff. So I'm gonna actually kind of take us from 4-Hour Work Week and then move over to your new 4-Hour Body, which has some wild stuff in there too. But since 4-Hour Work Week came out, I mean that was kind of one of those things that, I don't know, it was on the tip of almost everyone's tongue. It made a massive splash from not only people who were just kind of wanting to get something up and going online or live an incredible lifestyle, but to just major institutions like Google and so forth, where you've provided speeches there. What did you learn? What's like some updates, or maybe how has your philosophy changed on the 4-Hour Work Week since you put that out there?
The philosophy, the basic tenets haven't changed much. There are a few different mental frameworks that I think are very powerful that were not emphasized strongly enough in the 4-Hour Work Week. And I take principle among those, having had the chance to spend time with some incredible entrepreneurs and CEOs and billionaires and the whole nine yards, as have you, of course, but really trying to model these people and look at their best practices. What you realize is that time does the value of income. That's very true. So that's talking about the different currencies involved. And so you can have a bank account with $100 million in it, but if you're working every hour that you're awake, it could be argued that money is worth nothing, or that income is worth nothing. But the one step further that I've come to realize is that attention determines the value of your time and your income. So take, for instance, someone who decides on a Saturday because they haven't planned their weekend activities, non-work activities, decides to check email for 10 minutes when they wake up. And they get up, they have time to check email for 10 minutes. This is true, okay? But if they check email for 10 minutes and they find a problem they can't address until Monday morning, now they don't have control of their attention for the next 2 days because they'll be preoccupied about that problem that they need to face on Monday morning. And what that means is the next 48 hours are rendered useless. They're not productive. They're not relaxing. And that, I think, is one of the variables that you can really focus on and formulate in a simple question, and that is not asking yourself, can I spend this time or do I have time for this? But do I have attention for this? And perhaps the best way to phrase it is, can I afford the interruption? Okay. So do you have time to stop what you're doing, make a phone call to check on an item on your credit card statement? Sure, you do. But if that means you're interrupting one of your milestone tasks and it's going to take you another 30 minutes to get restarted and back in the zone to work on that task, can you afford that interruption? probably not. It's actually probably a very bad decision to interrupt yourself with that task. So that is something that I've seen across the board with the top performers, the high percentage of the top performers that I've modeled and spent time with, that I think could be emphasized to great effect for most people.
Now, do they bracket out time and say, okay, between, you know, I'll put 30 minutes on Tuesdays and Thursdays and I'll check email only, or is it more kind of haphazard? Where's the focus?
Sure. It depends on the person. There are different ways that they implement that. There are some people, Governor Schwarzenegger is well known for this. He actually does very little calendaring. He will not put things in his schedule that could end up becoming interruptions. And if anything is not one of his primary priorities, it's uncalendared. It's kind of catch me when you can catch me, and if you catch me, great. If not, you'll just have to keep on trying, and we'll see if we can make it happen. That is actually fairly common among some of the highest level CEOs that I've met, which was very surprising to me. I thought that it would be very meticulously planned and they would have a very set schedule according to their priorities, but it ended up being quite the opposite in some cases. But there are other people who will very clearly say, I'm on a meeting blackout or a meeting diet for the next 2 months. So people are like, hey, do you want to grab a lunch? Could you do a conference call? Could you do a meeting? Sorry, I'm just doing no meetings for the next 2 months. And they just patently reject, politely, every single offer to meet, to do a conference call, to do anything like that. Everything that gets to them has to be very precise with an ask and an email. And that's another way that they avoid interruption. And another approach that I've seen that's very curious is many of these people, and this is something I've been doing for a while now, will, instead of saying, here's my day, and in the beginning of the day, I'll take care of email, and then I'll take care of responses to this type of customer, and then I'll block out 2 hours to work on my most important task, as opposed to taking that type of approach, they break down the week. So they'll say, Monday is my administrative paperwork minutia day, where I deal with the things that I need to handle that aren't critically important, but they do need to be done. And then Tuesday is my focus day, where I have no meetings, no phone calls. All I do is focus on my to-dos. And then Wednesday is whatever it might be. And then let's say Friday is meeting and socialize day. So Friday would be the people that you want to meet with simply to maintain a social connection. And there is value there. Let's just say Friday is that day. So you might go and have wine early at 4:30 with someone who's an important who represents an important relationship, but you block out that day for that purpose. And I think that can also be extremely effective in multiplying your output and impact.
And which of these productivity hacks have you taken on?
The last one I mentioned, I've actually incorporated all of them. So if I'm doing no meetings and things like that, a slightly less severe version of that would be, hey, I'm not doing any in-person meetings just because I can't afford it right now. But you know, if you want to try to catch me, I'm not calendaring any phone calls because I'm already over-calendared. But you know, just try me anytime after like 6 p.m. a week from now. And if you catch me, awesome, I'm happy to talk. And what you find, you'll notice one thing I added in there, and that was, don't try me tomorrow. It's try me in a week. And particularly if it's not that important to you, it's more important to the other side than it is to you, and it's not one of your highest priorities. If someone doesn't follow up with you in a week because they don't have the discipline to do that, it's a bad idea to become involved with them in a business capacity or partnership capacity or anything else, because it's only going to ultimately cause headaches. So I like to delay the follow-up that way. And what you find is 90% of the people never ever follow up, which saves you the trouble and the ultimate headache of engaging with that person. And then the blocking out of specific days is also something that I found very, very effective. And in fact, what I said, the Monday as administrative, going over websites, looking at blogs, how do I tweak, how do I optimize this, and this, little things that need to get done that I like to have a hand in that aren't necessarily the most important multiplier. Like one of the next things I'd like to do is write a screenplay. And when I start that, that's going to be my priority. So tweaking my blog is not going to be the most important, but it would be something that I would do on a Monday. And then Tuesday would be completely dedicated to the screenplay, let's just say.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then Friday might be meeting up with financiers involved with funding independent films. And perhaps it's the producer of Thank You for Smoking, who's a tech entrepreneur. And
right.
things like that. We're just simply friends. I don't think there's anything wrong with batching your interactions with friends. Because it's not impersonal. You're just making you're making time for your friends in a way that respects everyone's time. And I think that people appreciate that if they have the same set of values and mindset that you do.
Yeah, that's great. You know, there's a couple quick things I want to follow up on, and then definitely want to get into this new behemoth, massive book that you got. You mentioned two things. One, you talked about your blog, you know, tweaking your blog. You have probably, I don't know where it lies right now. It's definitely one of the most popular blogs out there. You've you've just done an amazing job at making it a destination for people to hit. You have any tips there for doing that?
Absolutely. Blog has been a one huge experiment for me, and it's been very fun, sometimes frustrating, always insightful to receive the amount of feedback, immediate feedback that I do. So it's very easy to test different things. So the blog, just to answer your question, where is it? It's about 1,600 on Alexa in the U.S., so that means it's in the top 2,000 or 1,500 most popular sites in the U.S., which for a single author blog is pretty good. There are a lot of blogs that get more traffic that have 6, 10, 20 writers, but in terms of single author blogs, especially a blog that posts once a week or once every 4 weeks sometimes, it's fairly unusual. And so about 1 million uniques a month to the blog, sometimes more, sometimes a little less. And the way that I've accomplished that, I feel the most important tenet is that I try to create content that will be as interesting and or useful to read 2 years from now, 3 years from now, as it is the day that I write it. And what that means is that you can then use tools like StumbleUpon and other types of reputation-based social tools to increase the traffic over time, where you get to a point and you have not just one post that's popular for 2 or 3 days, but you have, let's just say, 100 posts that are popular every month, and that snowballs very quickly. So really focusing on every content, I'd say, is the most important factor. And if you have any other specific questions, you know, related to commenting, rules of engagement with commenters, things like that, I'd be happy to talk about that as well.
One thing I know you do really well, Tim, is the headlines and the titles for the blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you test those things, or where do you come up with that you think that those are going to be your big winners?
That's a very good question. So there are a few different ways. The first is I try not to reinvent the wheel. A very simple thing you can do is go to a blog they do post very frequently, like Seth Godin's blog, and look at the number of retweets. So you can go to Seth Godin's blog, and you can see at a glance 20 different posts and how many retweets there were. And the dirty little secret of Twitter retweets is that I would say at least half of the people who retweet don't read the content. They just base the retweet off of the headline, based off the tweet. So you can see what works and what doesn't. And you'll find that good bloggers, much like good copywriters, tend to have a number of templates or formulas that have proven effective that they use and tweak over time. So there's no need to start from scratch and reinvent the wheel. That's number one. Number two is I do use a tool called Super, SU.PR. That's the website. It's run by StumbleUpon. I'm an advisor to StumbleUpon and help them to develop this product, which allows you to post to Twitter and Facebook and perhaps a few others and look at the response that you get. So it tells you what time of day is the best time to post, what day of the week. But you can also look at how much click-through, how many click-throughs you get, organic traffic you get through StumbleUpon in addition to, which has 10 million plus users now, in addition to the Twitter traffic. And one of the things that I'll actually do, this is a little trick that you might like, is I'll put out a tweet at, let's say, 12 midnight or 11 p.m. Pacific Standard, so most people on the East Coast are asleep. I'll put that out, and I'll see what the response is in the first 2 hours or so. And then what I'll do is I will use a different headline, and using Super, I'll schedule it to be tweeted the next morning at like 7 a.m. Eastern Standard or 8 a.m. Eastern Standard. And what I'll do to change the URL, because if you use the same URL, this is true with Bitly as well, if you use this exact same URL, it's just going to use the same link, the same short link, and you won't have any useful data because it'll just be one. And the way you change that is after the URL, you put a question mark equals, I just put test one, you can put anything after it, but question mark equals, and then whatever, and that does not interfere with the click-through. Obviously, test it before you tweet it out, but that will then be turned into a different short link. So now different links, and you're effectively doing split testing, and it doesn't cost you a dime. So that's a very cheap MacGyver approach to getting some fairly decent data about which headlines are working and which aren't.